of life.
A podcast of the cinema.
Hello, husband and co-host Alonzo Duralde. How are you today?
I'm good, husband and co-host Dave White. A little...
What?
Logy, perhaps? I don't know.
I don't think I've ever understood the meaning of that word. Logy. Is it a real word, or yeah, you just make it up?
No, it's a real word. It means like, you know...
I don't encounter it very often.
Sluggish, you know...
You're sluggish today.
Yeah, like when you feel like you're wearing a wet pair of pajamas.
I'm sorry, what?
You know, like you have a heavy, wet blanket on your shoulders that you're lugging around, you know.
When in your life have you experienced that?
Oh, a heavy, wet blanket?
Wet pajamas or a wet blanket literally on top of you?
Neither. These are metaphors, Dave. Okay.
All right.
I'm a poet.
I've had an energetic and productive past several days.
Well, good for you.
As you know.
Mira que bien.
I baked. What does that mean?
Good for you, basically.
Okay. I baked a triumphant carrot cake.
You did.
Like, not to repeat what I said on Instagram, but I felt like Janine Garofalo folding sweaters at the Gap. People just do not know.
Well, you have had a journey.
A cake journey. It's been a cake journey where I've been learning and failing and succeeding and failing and then failing again and then kind of succeeding and then failing again. And then, oh, look, here, this one turned out really well. Woo! Like, that's when I'm like, hey, everybody, look what I can do.
This is like three even layers. They did not fall.
Oh, yeah. Each layer, nearly identical. Like, I could have won a technical on Great British Bake Off.
And your crumb was good, too.
Yes, everything about it. Do you want to know what I did? I'll talk about this on Linoleum Knife and Fork.
Yes,
but,
on one of our Patreon shows.
I'll tell you the secret of what I did that I just felt intuitively was the right thing to do, and I was right. I grated the carrots. I shredded them up, you know. I used more than the recipe said that I should because that's the one clue that Toni Morrison gave us in the documentary.
Ah, yes.
More carrots than you'd think. All sly with the not giving anyone the recipe.
No.
And then B, you know, just giving a hint, like a little hint. And so I looked at all the recipes and everyone was like, 2 cups of carrots. And I was like, how about 3? And I grated them and then I took half of them and I pulverized them in the food processor. That way, you see, they take up less volume.
Gotcha.
In the measuring cup. So you're kind of packing it in and really getting close to what the original recipe called for, but you're still getting more than you'd think, you see. And then, so you're not just full of shreds, you're actually, it's a mulch of carrots.
Here's a tip for filmmakers.
Yeah.
Never feel like you can't stray a little from what you think is your central thesis in a film about a celebrated individual. Because Dave and I will probably like never go back and necessarily cite what Toni Morrison has to say about literature in the Toni Morrison documentary.
Oh, I have done that too. Because there was a moment when, I can't remember now. I want to say, I heard this from Oprah. I know that Oprah said something about how she sometimes lost her way in reading Toni Morrison. I don't quote me on this, anybody, because somebody said it to Oprah or Oprah said it to Toni Morrison. But in any case, Toni Morrison was there and said, I have to go back and reread, you know, some things in your books. And Toni Morrison was like, well, that's reading. Just like... I live for having her confidence someday in my life.
In any event, yes, we will certainly talk about the literature parts.
If it would help if I were 5% as talented as she is.
Well, that would also, yes. But the thing is, the thing that we're going to be citing and remembering and living with for the rest of our lives out of this Toni Morrison documentary.
I will not rest.
Is that she apparently has a great carrot cake recipe.
The best anyone has ever tasted, they say.
And wouldn't give it to anyone.
Wouldn't give it to anybody. I'll one day.
Yeah.
I'll stumble on the secret, whatever it was.
Do we have to go through her papers, like whatever university they're in?
Is there an archive?
Maybe they're on the it's on the back of something by accident.
It might be in the archive. Here's the thing though. The cake I made, kind of impeccable.
It was pretty great.
It was.
it was moist. It was delicious.
Like, you know, you do something that you're really proud of, and you keep staying proud of it for days after. It has been, that cake is gone now, yes. Right? It has been 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I wake up in the morning and I think, remember that carrot cake you made the other day? Like, it's the first thing in my head.
See, if I'm happy about something and proud of myself for an accomplishment,
yeah,
that feeling does not stay. I'm glad that you're able to hang on to this.
They come so infrequently. I feel I have to hang on to them.
For me, I feel like it's immediately back to feeling like a failure all the time. My imposter syndrome ebbs just enough to be like, hey, you did this thing. Good for you. And then back to, oh, you phony.
That's why we have each other, you see, to bolster the other one. When the blazing light of our mediocrity comes right down on us too hard. Just a little too hard.
Provide each other a little shade. In all senses of the word.
I didn't mention your other podcast.
Oh, are we doing that?
Okay. Well, we're still in the introductory, the honeymoon period of this podcast, where everyone's sort of happy they're here and wondering when the film discussions are going to begin.
Shortly, we promise.
You are the co-host of the what's it called? Breakfast All Day.
Yes.
Who Shot Ya? On the Maximum Fun Network.
Mm-hmm.
A once a weeker on the Deck the Hallmark podcast on the Bramble Jam Network.
Mm-hmm. Which is also the Bramble Jam podcast network is also where you can hear me every week on
A Film and a Movie. Here's why I always forget Film and a Movie. Why didn't you just call your podcast Dave White if you wanted people to forget what it was? I have an incredibly generic name, and you have a podcast with an incredibly generic name.
I thought it spoke to what we were trying to do.
It certainly does.
I grant you, it's a little generic, whatever. The show itself is not.
The show itself is a pure delight.
I'm very proud of that show.
Full of, like, A-lister guests.
We've had some pretty impressive guests.
I'm always impressed. Here's the thing. I'm always like, oh, wait, that person is pretty well known. So is that one. Oh, Alonso knows all these people.
Not necessarily. Sometimes I just reach out on Twitter.
Sometimes you take your shot.
I do.
Yeah.
Doesn't always work, but sometimes it does.
We have some movies to talk about. And what are their names? Let me pull up my document that will tell me what they are.
What are these films?
These films are... I've got it right here. I got it.
We haven't talked about Godzilla vs. Kong on this show yet, have we?
That's one of them
that
we're going to be discussing. Why don't we get right into that then while I look up the document? Says I already know that's one of them. What happened to my notes?
I don't know. What happened to you being a producer of this program?
Well, you know, sometimes the producer...
Godzilla vs. Kong.
You know, I made a cake this weekend. It was, it was really so great.
No, you were on a roll this weekend.
I found my notes.
You made it a glorious pot roast.
I did make an Easter pot roast.
Yeah.
And that was really nice too.
Mm-hmm.
Used the fanciest ingredients I could find.
You had to get some cognac for that sauce.
That was hilarious because it was Ina Garten's pot roast recipe.
Mm-hmm.
And it requires two tablespoons of cognac. Do you know what it means when you don't drink booze and then you're like, this recipe is like, oh, you need cognac. And then you think, okay, well, if I do a drizzly order, then that's a minimum amount. And then there's a delivery charge. And I was like, I'm going to not use the cognac. Ina Garten can't be right about everything. But then I thought, no, I must. And so friend and neighbor Gary Cotty was like, I'm going to the grocery store. And I said, hey, how about some cognac? Get the teensiest, tiniest little airport.
I would say if you were going to the liquor store, he could get you the stewardess size.
Get the teensy tiny first class cabin.
Yeah.
Like 2 tablespoon.
Dollhouse booze.
Yeah. He shows up, puts into the bucket a full-sized bottle of cognac.
Yes.
It's going to take 37 pot roasts to go through that bottle. Maybe. I'm not blaming him because he came over and ate it on the balcony.
Maybe you can enjoy some as an after
dinner. I even said, hey, let me Venmo you. And he's like, just feed me.
As an after dinner liqueur.
I still don't know how much a bottle of cognac costs. I fear that they are quite expensive when they're not the 2 tablespoon size.
True. He's very generous and he really enjoyed that pot roast.
I'll tell you though, it made that sauce sing.
Uh-huh.
Godzilla versus Kong.
Godzilla versus Kong.
Godzilla's angry. I'll explain this movie.
Please.
Godzilla's angry. And everyone was wondering why. Why suddenly you're stomping on us all the time, Godzilla? We thought you were our friend. Turns out there's an evil corporation run by Damien Bashir.
The fact that it's called Apex should tell you a thing.
Evil corporation that is screwing up the environment. And if people should know anything about Godzilla, it's that terribly awful, horrible nuclear and chemical things, A, created him, and B, are his nemesis.
Yes.
So, meanwhile, Kong is growing tired of his confinement.
Yes.
Because they have him in a, what was that Jim Carrey movie?
A Truman Show.
Truman Show.
The Skull Kong Island in, Truman Show.
They got Kong in a Truman Show where he's in an environment that is suitable for him, tailored to him. But he's trying to bust out. He's not happy either. No one's happy. None of the big monsters. No kaiju is having a good day.
No. Can this monsterage be saved?
So then all the people run around doing science things, and then the bad guy, Damien Bashir, he runs around doing bad guy things. And ultimately what we learn is that Damien Bashir has a secret weapon that he's hiding. We're not going to tell you what that secret weapon is because it is a moment of pleasure in the film. And then the monsters fight. Like you want them. You want them to fight.
Let them fight.
You fight. They fight. They stomp. They smash on things. And they destroy cities. And people run and go, Godzilla. That's what you want.
Yes.
From a Godzilla movie. Why was I underwhelmed by this?
Yeah.
I have some ideas why. But well, I'll tell you. You tell me what you think first.
I think a couple of things. I mean, it is a tricky balance to have enough of the human story and characters to give us a little, you know, a roux, if you will, you know, to sort of start this whole thing off with that we care about and that from whence the giant monster battles will eventually ensue. And like, I thought there was too much of that in the 2014 Godzilla. I thought they really got it right in the 2019 Godzilla King of the Monsters.
You and I are kind of outliers on digging that one.
We are. I know a few people who've stepped up and been like, no, I like that one too. But a lot of people
heroically stepped up.
That's
right.
Bravely in the face of mass
of no mockery. One really caring all that much.
No. Anyway, this movie, I feel like this is my impression. I didn't like read any interviews with the director. I don't know what the behind the scenes were. My impression is it felt like they were like, let's make the human stuff obvious and dumb and get it out of the way as quickly as possible.
Right.
And then let's just have monster fight. And on paper, I'm down for that. That is a perfectly valid strategy. That is a way to do this movie. But the human stuff is so dumb and so flimsy and underwritten, and you have Millie Bobby Brown as a character who was actually a character in the last movie,
uh-huh.
who is now just sort of along for the ride.
Running around yelling at people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Brian Tyree Henry gets saddled with some really unfunny lines as the comedy relief in this movie, as a conspiratorial podcaster who suspects that Apex is up to something, you know, hinky. And then the monster fighting happens, and it's just kind of not super exciting monster fighting. And so, yeah, this whole enterprise just kind of left me cold, and it left me cold not because it's not serious cinema, but because as a kaiju movie, as a giant monster movie with the verses in the title,
right.
It just didn't deliver for me.
I wonder if the conditions of viewership are partly to blame here.
Possibly.
As of this recording, movie theaters in many other cities besides Los Angeles...
No, here too.
...are already open. And they are beginning to reopen in Los Angeles. However, we're not vaccinated fully yet. We're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And you know, y'all have, if you listen long enough, you know our thoughts about this whole let's open everything up situation. We're against it. And what that means is for the past year, you and I have been reviewing films via publicists' screener links sent to us, sent to the laptop, then thrown to the television.
Yes.
So we're watching it on our television, which is a medium-sized TV. We don't have a big, giant screen. Now, I am a very, 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 very old person. And I grew up watching Godzilla movies on TV.
Yes. Yes.
Little, dumb, old televisions. Okay?
I don't think I saw a projected Godzilla movie, not counting, like, the awful new ones, until what year did I screen Destroy All Monsters in Dallas? Like, 1997, 98? Yeah. So I was in my 30s.
Really?
Yeah. Before I saw one on the big screen, because I did not go to any of them in the original run.
Okay.
I was too little.
Right. And they didn't have the kid matinee scene in your city, in Atlanta?
Not to the extent that you
Well,
know.
They listen, I saw them all on screens projected when I was 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old because of those Saturday matinees that were specifically films aimed at children in our smallish town.
The original Showa era.
Yes. Not Claude Lanzmann's.
No. S-H-O-W-A.
Yes. Okay. So anyway, just clarifying that for the audience.
Yeah, I never said that out loud before. That does sound weird, doesn't it?
Yeah. So the thing is that, you know, a combination of lots of television viewings and every few months seeing one on a screen because they just kept bringing them back round and round. You know, I could go see Godzilla versus what I came to learn was Godzilla versus Hedorah. Back when I was 8, it was Godzilla versus the Smog Monster. Yeah. I saw that like 4 times on screens as a kid. Like Destroy All Monsters, you know, all of them.
This is where the 4 years between us, I think, also makes sense.
I'm 3 and a half-ish years older than you are. So something like that.
Your birthday's in June and my birthday's in May. You are a solid 3 years older than me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hadn't done that math yet. Also, I'm very bad at math and calendars.
Okay.
So we watched this on a TV, but it felt like the entire time looking at it that I was supposed to be at the Grove in a big house.
Right.
Or at the Arclight in a big house on a big screen. That's what it felt like. And I have a feeling that I would have been happier. I would have come out of it going, yeah, Godzilla movie. Because here's the thing. Any Godzilla movie is better than no Godzilla movie, not counting whatever the hell that was in 1998. with Matthew Broderick and whoever. So I'm, you know, I have very mixed feelings about this. I think that it is as competently made as any other older Godzilla film. It may have just been I needed a big screen. Now, I have some problems that do not have anything to do with the format.
I was going to say, I think, if anything, maybe seeing it on a big screen would have made you more forgiving.
Maybe.
But I think it wouldn't necessarily fix everything.
My problems are...
Yes.
Godzilla's name is first in the title. You know what that means? It's supposed to be a movie about Godzilla. Do you know who this movie is about?
Kong.
Well, Kong and I are friends. You know?
I got no beef with Kong.
I'm fine with Kong. I don't dislike Kong. But I don't have a lifelong loving relationship with Kong. Kong is just one of those characters out there.
Yeah.
Who popped up in one Godzilla movie a million years ago and fought Godzilla.
Yes.
And then before that was in a very old one from the 30s. And then after he fought Godzilla, he was in one in 1976 with Jessica Lange. So I've had Kong in my life the whole time.
Sure.
But Kong has never felt like my friend in the way that Godzilla feels like my friend.
I mean,
Godzilla is...
They're both icons.
My buddy. Godzilla is a guiding light in my life.
Certainly.
Okay? This movie is all about Kong.
Yeah.
It's all about Kong. Godzilla is a supporting character.
Yeah.
At best.
Godzilla is like when they promised you Frank Sinatra in the Cannonball Run 2, and then you only ever see him in a one shot by himself or the back of somebody else's head. Like, it's that
right.
level of like, I thought Godzilla was going to be in this movie, and until the titular battle at the very end, not much.
Also, and I'm about to go, I've been wondering, like, do I currently sound like a Snyder Cut maniac or not?
Please don't.
Here's what I'm about to say.
Okay.
I am a traditionalist. I want to hear the Godzilla roar.
That's fair.
And y'all know which one I'm talking about. Godzilla has a distinctive copyrighted
yes.
roar. They chose not to use it in this film.
Yeah.
Furthermore, Godzilla has a theme, musical theme. When Godzilla shows up, there's a song. There's a symphonic
yeah.
song
a that suite. Plays.
Yes, a suite. Like Donna Summer's MacArthur Park suite. There's Godzilla theme music. Do you know what's not in this movie? The Godzilla theme music. I didn't get either of those things. I was not catered to properly, and my feelings are hurt.
If this were Jaws versus Kong,
yeah.
you'd get that theme music.
You'd get Jaws' song.
If this were Jason v. Kong,
you'd get Jason's song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that there is no Godzilla music is a big oversight here.
I'm
It's fan disservice.
I feel wounded by this.
Yeah.
But then the surprise element, the surprise guest that shows up near the end,
is welcome. Yes.
And made me go, yay, character, you're here. Like, it made me happy.
Yes.
Also, just watch it. Who cares?
I guess.
I'm not unhappy that I saw it.
I think, it's weird because on the one hand, it's sort of like this is so a movie to have on HBO Max and half pay attention to it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, like if you are feeling confident about going to a theater, if you're vaccinated up, if your area's numbers are good, if your local theaters have new ventilation systems and
rules,
people aren't next to each other and you want to go to a theater, yes, this is the kind of spectacle that does loan itself to being seen on the big screen if you're going to see it at all. I just still find it a letdown, not just in comparison to like classic kaiju, but even just again to 2019's Godzilla vs. King of the Monsters. It felt like they really were onto something that they're not onto anymore.
And one more thing that was on my mind when I was watching it.
Oh.
The recent Godzilla films have done their very best to get you to care about the human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, the humans were meant to convey facts.
Exposition.
Science facts.
Yes.
Here's what's coming. Let's all get out of the way.
You know? Here's this weapon we built.
Yeah.
Oh no, aliens.
But the recent American films have really tried to get you to care about what's going on with the people. You know, their connection to each other.
Yes. Juliette Binoche in a nuclear reactor.
And I'm not against this, but I also think that if you're going to be a purist, maybe it's irrelevant. And dear friend and friend of the show,
mm-hmm.
Nayland Blake.
Yes.
On Twitter, all the way back in January when the trailer dropped, said this. This is quoting their Twitter. You have to pick a scale. I'm not reading all the tweets in their entirety, just the best parts. You have to pick a scale. Once you've shown us how difficult it is for our human characters to get through a family breakfast, you can't show them magically finding each other in the middle of a citywide monster fight and have us care about both. I like the movies that abandon the human once the monsters show up, because they remind me that as a kid, I wanted to be the monster, to stomp around and knock over my city full of shoeboxes. Kaiju are epic and sublime and alien to human experience. The movies can show them as that, so long as they don't hold our hand through every last second of the story.
That's fair.
That's a perfect distillation of what these films should be.
Speaking of scale, there is a whole recurring thing regarding Kong and his ability to see a small child.
Yes, who is literally, if we are to believe the one shot where she's touching him, yeah. She is the size of his fingernail.
Yeah. So it's like, imagine having this, like, you know, this relationship and the ability to read subtle differences of expression.
Right.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Come on.
Laser eyes.
Guess so.
Hey, we have an advertiser.
We do. Yay.
We got an advertiser back. We haven't run them all off.
Yes. Some of them come back for more.
AmberPetty.com.
Amber Petty.
Are you going to sing the theme from Sanford?
Amber Petty's got a class that she teaches.
Sanford and Son theme. New lyrics. Would you like to try freelance writing, but you have nowhere to start? Are you an actor? Wondering what WTF do I do now while we're all waiting to get our vaccine? Join Amber Petty's workshop. It's free. It's a free workshop.
Free.
It's like the muffin basket, the cornbread basket at the restaurant. They're free.
They're free.
Amber Petty's 60-minute workshop will take you through a through. I'll start that sentence again.
She have a workshop for talking English?
I'm reading copy. Amber Petty's 60-minute workshop will take you through 3 key steps to becoming a freelance writer. She will walk you through the basics of how freelance writing works, what you need to do to get started, even when you have 0 samples or experience, and the simple thing you can do to start writing now. Now, this workshop is on specific days. Here they are. April 15th at 5:30 Pacific. Saturday, April 17th at 11 a.m. Pacific. Sunday, April 18th at 3 p.m. Pacific. Tuesday, April 20th at 7 p.m. Pacific. These are all via Zoom.
Hmm.
It's free, y'all.
Did we mention free?
What we're going to do is we're going to post this on the Facebook.
It'll be in the show notes.
Oh, it'll be in the show notes?
Yeah.
These dates and times and stuff?
Yes.
Great. We're good at ads.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sign up for the free class at amberpetty.com/linoleum.
Uh-huh.
There is no code required.
Okay, then.
And that's what's up.
Thanks, Amber.
Let's talk about a good movie that is serious.
Okay.
Concrete Cowboy.
Yes.
It's based on a YA novel from the author Gregory Neri. It's the feature film debut of Ricky Staub or Staub.
Don't know.
It is fiction. However, it is also not fiction.
It's set in a real life milieu.
It is inspired and set in a real place, real situation, inspired by real people in North Philadelphia, specifically the Fletcher Street Urban Riding Club. That's the name of the group. They are a group of black horse riders who rescue horses and train them and ride them around. There's also a group there that is called the Black Cowboys Association. So the story here is pretty simple. There's a teenage boy, 14, 15, yeah, played by Caleb McLaughlin from Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
He is sent for the summer to live with his father, but he doesn't really know his father. He lives with his mom. His dad is played by Idris Elba. And the father is part of this group of cowboys. He keeps the horses. He trains them. We will not give away a spoiler of where one of the horses is kept because it's a wonderful surprise. It barely counts as a spoiler, but it's a bit of a jolt and it's fun.
We'll let you discover that on your own.
And he's part of this informal group of black horse riders. The kid hates everything, hates all of this. He is very skeptical of this. He wants no part of it. Slowly, though, he comes to grow close not only to one of the horses, but also to feel a sense of belonging about his place in this new community and ultimately close with his father.
Yes. This is a movie that, if you are looking at it from the outside, smacks of countless movies you've seen before about a troubled youth being sent off to live with a relative for the summer, engaging in an activity that is new to said youth, and having a complete like life change over it. And yes, that's what this movie is on paper. But it's done so well. It's so intuitively written and acted.
Uh-huh.
The sense of place couldn't be stronger, to the extent that it's actually shot on locations, and you find out in the closing credits of the film, featuring people who are actually members of this North Philly horse community.
Half of the actors are first-time folks who have never acted before. They're just part of this group.
But the pros are people like Idris Elba, people like Caleb McLaughlin, and then, you know, Lorraine Toussaint, who's great. Jarrell Jerome from When They See Us plays this guy who had, you know, kind of run with the horse pack for a while, and now he's doing dangerous things on the street, and we know he's doomed because he's the sort of charming loose cannon Robert De Niro in Mean Streets character, but he's terrific. This movie really won me over, and it is a reminder that you can traffic in familiar tropes, and you can be in a genre or a mode of storytelling that is not particularly revolutionary, but you can take that and make it into something really special, which this is.
First of all, everything you say is true.
Thank you.
But I've learned a name, Minka Farthing Cole.
Okay.
That is the name of the cinematographer.
Wow.
And I needed to say that name out loud because this movie looks so damn good all the time. There are so many beautiful framing, you know, moments. There are so many beautiful shots. There's so much good, like, emotional lighting, if that makes sense.
Totally.
The dialogue here, let's take a swing at something for a minute. It's very compact, you know, emphasizes inspirational slogans that sound more like dialogue than, you know, actual human speech. Not always, but there are moments where you're thinking,
okay, you know, just needlepoint that onto a sample.
Are we done?
For us?
Are you done trying to inspire me? And there are, as you said, there are plot points in the final half hour that you more or less know, you know,
what you're in
are
for.
Coming. It is an overtly inspirational film.
Sure.
And it's very confidently mainstream in its approach, but so moving. And as you said, you know, these really solid performances from Idris Elba and Laurent Toussaint. Kayla McLaughlin, I haven't really watched Stranger Things.
Mm.
You did, but I haven't really kept up with it.
Yeah.
I looked up this kid because not only has he been in Stranger Things, like, he's done musical theater, he's done, you know, Broadway, he's been all over the place. This kid is you will learn his name. He's not going anywhere, and he's already so good at what he does.
He's going somewhere, but he's not going anywhere.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just wanted to be clear.
He's sticking around.
Yes.
He's staying.
Yes.
And he's so good at this as this troubled kid who reconnects to people who want to love him and want to take care of him.
Yes.
And you just started watching Ted Lasso. And that is a film that you are now calling Paddington with a Mustache.
Yes.
And
a show.
And I am a sucker for well-done cultural product about people trying to take care of each other.
Yeah.
And that's what this is. And so it's so lovely. There are these wonderfully tender moments between the father and the son that will choke you up.
Yeah.
And
I knew we were going to get here.
It's a horse movie.
Yes, it is.
And the boy loves the horse, and the horse loves the toy.
Don't start with this. Dave still hasn't gotten over War Horse. Anytime
I was cheated out of Dream Horse last year during the pandemic.
Anytime a conversation comes up about release dates and what's coming out, he's like, what about Dream Horse? When do we get to see Dream Horse?
I require one horse movie per year where a little girl, or a boy, or a grown woman, Toni Collette, like, falls into a relationship of mutual understanding and affection with a horse, and the horse, you know, wins a race, or, you know, teaches the person a thing, or, you know, Dakota Fanning nurses she's seven, but she's nursing the horse back to health. Doesn't matter what movie it is.
Bring
me a horse movie.
A thing we talked about when we were watching it is like, this may be one of the, this movie does not like shilly-shally around the realities of
cleaning stables,
mucking out a stall and what that involves.
I really, really love this film. So
it's quite
good. And then you learn all this stuff.
Yeah,
about the writers and the things they're trying to accomplish, and specifically in Philadelphia. I assume there are other communities like this in other cities.
Probably, yeah. But I mean, like, this is not like outside of Philadelphia. This is in the city.
No, yeah. So anyway, watch this one, Concrete Cowboy.
And you might want to have the titles on sometimes, because unless you are from the area, if you don't know what a John is or what
goodness.
A bull is.
Philadelphia slang.
There's a lot of jargon going on here.
Philadelphia slang is its own thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Shout out to our friends at Movie John.
Speaking of Johns.
Yeah.
A word I still don't understand.
Because it can mean anything.
All right. Hey, Alonzo.
Yes.
Satan. I'm going to tell you something. I just did a little karaoke there for you.
Uh-huh. From The Omen?
No.
Oh.
From a Sonic Youth song from the 80s called Satan is Boring.
In this movie, definitely.
I cannot tell you the number of times when I worked at movies.com. One of the things they made me do every time I wrote a review was I had to provide a little 2 to 4 word tagline
that would
be sort of slugged as the review, and you would click on it and it would go through to my review.
Mm-hmm. And wouldn't people get mad because they thought that was the whole review?
People who didn't know how to use the internet thought that was the entire review. Yes. Yeah. They pay him to write 3 word reviews. How dare they? Well, let me tell you something. They didn't pay me enough. How about that? Yeah. So I cannot tell you the number of dumb, satanic, demonic possession films that I slugged with Satan is boring. Yeah.
Which brings us to The Unholy.
Yes.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan plays a disgraced journalist who lost his job at a big fancy newspaper.
He's got a flask.
Yeah, he made a bunch of stuff up.
That's how you know.
Yeah, so now he's always tipping into that flask, and he's writing for sort of shady websites that talk about the paranormal and whatnot.
Right.
So he travels out into the middle of Massachusetts, Nowheresville, on the hunt for some
Rachel Maddow's backyard.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. On the hunt for some cattle mutilation stories, he instead finds this doll that, you know, has a chain wrapped around it, and he, thinking nothing of it, steps on it. Well, oops, no.
He intentionally does.
That's true. He steps on to take a picture of it, and he can say, "Oh, look, spooky things."
Yeah.
Well, anyway, stepping on the doll means he has released the spirit of Mary, who in the pre-credit sequence we see get nailed to a tree and burned to the stake, because in movies like this...
It's Mary Wicks. It's a real sad way to go.
I know. That's the way to spoil the shocking ending. In movies like this, you know, the witch hunters of the 18th and 19th centuries were actually doing a public service.
Right, yes.
And were not like fanatical lunatic
misogynists.
Yes, they know what they did. Anyway, so Mary possesses a young woman named Alice, played by newcomer Cricket Brown. She is the niece of the local parish priest, and she is a deaf mute until she is possessed, at which point she speaks, she hears, and has
messages from Mary.
She brings everyone the good news about Mary, and of course it's a Catholic church. They're like, "Mary, you say?" Well, they should have asked which Mary. And so, of course, you know, like more and more people show up for healings and whatnot. And the one of the local bishops gets very excited that this small town in the middle of Massachusetts is going to be the new Lords. But Jeffrey Dean Morgan and a local doctor played by Katie Hazelton know what's up and have to try and stop things. This is a PG-13 horror movie.
Yeah.
Boy, howdy.
Yeah.
Which means jump scares a go-go.
Right.
It is the directorial debut of Evan Spiliotopoulos, who has a vast and very weirdly eclectic career as a screenwriter, but this is his first time directing. And there's a nugget of an idea here, which is basically like, what if The Song of Bernadette was a horror movie?
Right.
You know, and, you know, hey, it's Easter weekend. Why not? But it's just very unremarkable.
What I love / not love about this film.
Carrie Elway's Massachusetts accent?
Here's the thing about a Massachusetts accent.
Yeah. There are several.
There's more than one. And he's trying to do all of them. He's like the land of 1,000 dances. Like, I will do all the Massachusetts accents.
While eating this steaming mug of clam chowder.
Yes. No, this movie is built on a world where it is clearly a fact of science that evil spirits can be exorcised out of a person and then trapped in a doll.
Oh, sure.
Ceramic toys are more powerful
than Satan.
Than the entirety of the devil himself.
Yes.
It is also well understood that you can only pray to that spirit twice, not three times, but only twice. Lest you Candyman it.
Into manifestation or whatever,
And then it's just going to turn your entire town into a demonic sinkhole. And then, you know, experts show up. Jeffrey Dean Morgan is like, "Everyone, I must tell you about the supernatural." Then there's a priest who's there to debunk it all. And it's like, "No, it's not real. In fact, I have read libraries of books about the subject." That's an actual line from the film.
And the guy's under 30.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, we're debating this as true? Like, what's going on? And so, but, you know, eventually it all turns out that they're all, everyone's right. You know, everybody's right about the evil spirits and forces. And then they rescue the town. And the end. The town says, well, glad that evil spirit's gone. Let's go back to the ice cream social.
In the same
until someone steps on another antique doll.
In the same way that these movies like always make witch hunters the good guys.
Right.
Also, the Catholic Church is the Avengers.
Yeah.
You know, and like they are the priests are the superpower guys who, you know, they're Doctor Strange. They know the mystic incantations and they know which, you know, oils to throw on people or whatever. What, you know, alb to kiss around their neck to make the evil go away.
Right.
Yeah, it's just the only thing that makes this interesting is that there is a panoply of really good character actors here. So, you know, you've got your Jeffrey Dean Morgan and your Katie Hazelton and your Cary Elwes, even though he's hamming it up. William Sadler plays the priest. You know, so it's like these folks are getting a paycheck, which I certainly don't begrudge them, but it's just not a... This is one of those movies that when I'm doing my list at the end of the year, like best and worst, I'll be like, what was The Unholy?
Yeah, exactly.
And then I'll look it up on IMDb and go, oh, that one.
Right. We said we were going to do four, but we're actually only doing three. I got that number wrong.
Ah.
I'm dumb.
Well, we are going to catch up with Shiva Baby later on after you see it.
I haven't seen it yet, but I want to, so I'm going to.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we're still going to maybe try and squeeze in a few more Oscar nominees before...
For sure.
Now in the end of the month.
Yes, we are. Yeah. Do you got a streaming or a DVD or a whatnot?
Yeah, new Blu-ray, our good friend Graham Colbeans' documentary, Queer Japan.
Yes.
Which I think is... I'm very proud of him. It came out... really well. It is basically a look at the LGBTQ plus community.
A variety of queer communities.
In its many manifestations in Japan. You know, on a not just on a sexual level, but social and political and artistic. Yep. Just a lot of different communities, a lot of different circles. And, you know, the varying ways in which people... in which the country is moving forward, but at the same time remains very traditional. And, you know, he speaks to...
Like so many countries.
Exactly, yeah.
Including the United States.
Indeed. No, no fingers being pointed. You know, it talks to cartoonist Gengoro Tagame. It talks to, you know, politicians and people who run underground club nights and all kinds of different folks. It's a really fascinating documentary, and it's made with... there's a real drive to the film, you know. I mean, documentaries, the subject matter will only take you so far, and then the actual filmmaking comes in. But you know, there's a real sense, there's a real pop to the editing, there's a real sense of energy to the way he tells this story. And so, yeah, now you can get it on physical media, and you should.
You know what else?
What?
Barb and Star.
Yes.
Barb and Star's on Blu-ray. Y'all, it's dumb and so good. It's so funny.
And the Blu-ray has...
And you might hate it because apparently that's the only response. It's either like you love it or you despise it.
Indeed.
Yeah. But listen. I cannot let a Claire Denis opportunity go by.
Oh, heavens no.
Her mid-ooze... mid-2000s film, The Intruder, as it was known in the United States, is now returned to an exclusive digital run.
Okay.
For the next few days only at Metrograph.com, Metrograph in New York.
Mm.
They fancied up the title for the United States now. It's now being called L'Intrus.
No.
Yeah, because, you know, that's French.
Yes.
The Michel Subor from Beau Travail.
Mm-hmm.
He plays a mercenary who's lived a difficult life, and he's a difficult person, and he has an estranged son that he doesn't have any contact with, and he's trying to find that son again. He also needs a heart transplant.
Okay.
He's also being chased by a lady on a sled.
Okay.
He goes.
Are there dogs on this sled?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The.
Oh well, in that case.
That's in the Alps where he's being chased by the lady on the sled. But then he has to go to Korea. He goes to Tahiti. He travels all around the world, trying to escape himself.
I see.
It's a Claire Denis movie. You know that he cannot escape himself.
Is the lady on the sled in Tahiti?
No, okay. She's in the Alps.
Oh, okay.
If you love Claire Denis films, I will tell you that of all the Claire Denis films that I have seen, this one is the most demanding and unnerving.
Of all the Claire Denis films, it's the Claire Denis-est.
It's perhaps the Claire Denis-est of all the Claire Denis films. And I love it so much, and I've never been able to have, like, conversations with anybody about it, because I remember when it came out, and it played in Los Angeles for a week, and I tried to have conversations about it with friends at that time, and none of them had seen it or wanted to see it. And I was like, why must I be alone?
That's what the internet is for, Dave.
Well, yeah, but, you know.
I'm sorry I'm not there for you on the Claire Denis front in the way that I could be.
Talk to Anderson Jones, and he'd be like, no. What real movies have you seen this week? Weekly refrain from that character.
While we're making recommendations for things real quick. So every week I thank Blue.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Interrupting you. Once this ends at Metrograph, it may jump over to other virtual cinemas.
Okay.
There is a DVD that you can get. It's here in the United States. So it's findable.
Okay.
It's not like you have to catch it before April 8th at the Metrograph, you know, virtual cinema, or you're sunk. It's out there.
Gotcha.
But it's getting a resurgence right now, and possibly may wind up at other in other virtual cinemas, your local art house. Check with them.
Okay.
All right, go on.
May I now?
You may now.
Thank you. Blue, who is the wonderful composer of our theme music. I try and thank him every week for that. A very talented singer-songwriter. And he recently went back and re-recorded an album of his called Redhead, which was the album that I first sort of drew me into his work. And went back and kind of like did all the songs again, but with new orchestrations and different, you know, tempos and styles and all kinds of things. Like, I don't have the vocabulary to explain to me what he did, but he basically reimagined the whole album. And it's called Redhead Record Club, and it's been available for a while streaming, but it is now available on CD. And if you are one of those people who still buys CDs, I am, and who just likes physical media in general, this is a thing you'll want to have.
CDs are good.
Yes.
They're compact digital discs with recorded music on it.
That's correct. So it's a nice thing to have for your collection. Anyway, so yeah, go to...
Let me tell you, every time you're playing Blue just around the house, for like the first 10 seconds, I think, is this an ELO song that I don't know? And then you go, no, that's Blue. So that's... Listen, I'm complimenting Blue right
yes.
now.
Yep. He, in fact, did an entire album with of a group that he assembled called L.E.O.
Right.
They sang very ELO-sounding stuff, but this is not that category. Anyway, if you go to his Bandcamp page, you can buy the album digitally if you want to, but you can also, you can now order this this CD at blueBLEU.bandcamp.com.
Got some letters.
Oh. But before we do that,
oh yeah, I would.
We have a Patreon page.
I'll tell everyone all about it right now, and I'll make it very, very concise and effective as a marketing.
Oh, okay, Don Draper, go for it.
All right, our Patreon is not a slide projector. It's a carousel that takes you home.
It's a time machine.
It's a time machine. Yeah, sorry. It's a time machine. Sorry, I got it all.
Blew that pitch. Kodak just left the room.
So we Patreon.com/linoleumknife. Subscriptions to extra material that we produce. Everything from daily cultural recommendations to a couple times a month, we do a show called Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife, where we talk about an old movie that we want to talk about for an extended period of time. We do a show called LKTV, where we talk about television. We do a show called Linoleum Knife and Fork, where we talk about carrot cake. We do a show called Linoleum Nights, where we talk about whatever the heck we please, only it's the one show where we actually use all the quotidian profanity that peppers our speech when we are not on the microphone doing this show or any of the others.
Correct.
We wanted the time that we could let it fly, let it rip. How many times a day do I say the F word?
About as many times, about as many times as you drop something, so several dozen.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife. Yes. Now we have some letters.
Yes, we do.
Kelly says, I just watched Collective because of you two.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Thank you, I think.
Kelly writes.
Time for a glass of wine.
Yeah, can't blame you there.
I'm going to tell you this, that I watched Collective in the morning and I wanted a glass of wine when it was over. It's so good and so... The word is harrowing.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
And from Lynette. Lynette Anderson, as we've discussed before. Thanks, guys, for helping me hold on to my sanity during the pandemic. I love being a Patreon member. Oh, this is that's funny, because we just talked about Patreon. And this was not planned.
Nope.
I didn't know this letter had any mention of Patreon. This is not an Amber Petty style ad where we knew it going
no,
in.
No, no. Yeah. We do not, we're not planners here.
I love being a Patreon member and listening to all of your podcasts. I was tickled pink when you mentioned my name and read my comment recently. I have a supervisor at work that tells everyone that I had a hit with I Never Promised You a Rose Garden and sings that song to me constantly. Lynette, I'm very sorry.
Unless he sings really well.
Unless you love it when your boss does that, I'm very sorry.
Yeah, that could be annoying.
Remember when you worked at the film festival in Dallas? And
I had a coworker named Brandy, and when I met her, she immediately said, yes, yes.
I know.
What I'm a good wife I would be, but my life, my love, my lady is the sea. I got it. I was like, I wasn't going to go there, but thank you for clearing the air on that one.
My poor sister-in-law in Massachusetts is named Bambi.
Mm.
And she loves her name. My brother loves her name. I love her name. But I guarantee you, she's never complained about it.
No. But I'm sure she's heard
it
all.
I guarantee you that she has heard it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I worked with Brandy, I also worked with an Allison. So I had those two songs stuck in my head all the time.
Yeah. Anyway, Lynette continues. When you mentioned Lynn Anderson and that you had seen her in concert at the age of 6, Dave, I got some chuckles out of that. Keep up the good work. I love you both. 5 stars all around.
Oh, thank you, Lynette.
That's it. We're done. Goodbye. This podcast is over.
There were other letters.
No, that's it. You sent me 2.
No.
No?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you sent me 2 letters.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, wait. There is one more.
I was going to say, that can't be right.
It says Almodovar.
Yes.
Yeah. Houston. Says, hey, Dave and Alonzo, happy Easter. I've been a fervent listener to your podcast for a while now. For perspective, I was a senior in high school when I started listening, and I'm currently a senior in college.
Well,
your podcast has helped me through some tough times in my life, and I couldn't be more grateful. Your love and passion for cinema has further enforced and validated my love for it as well. Speaking of which, due to the outspoken love and admiration for Pedro Almodovar on your podcast, it's made me seek out his films and watch them. With each subsequent film, he is becoming one of my favorite filmmakers. Hmm. You may have touched on this in the past, but I was curious about your favorites from him.
Well,
I got it for Volver.
Volver's
all
great.
All day, yeah. Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he has this really extraordinary run that starts with All About My Mother.
Yep.
And goes all the way to The Skin I Live In. So, like, anything in between those two. So, like, Talk to Her. I'm not so crazy about Broken Embraces, but I know you're a fan.
I'm a huge fan of Broken Embraces.
Bad Education.
Yep.
Volver, yeah, you know, Skin I Live In, you know, these are, those are all great. If you want to go a little further,
and when Alonso says the titles, he pronounces them correctly.
If you want to go further back, you know, Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, of course, is great. Matador doesn't always get enough love. I think that one's really fun. I really like Labyrinth of Passion, which is like his second feature. It's still very kind of down and dirty, Almodovar, but it's the first one that his guy, the Antonio Banderas, pops up in. Yeah.
Baby Banderas.
Baby Banderas. For sure.
Yeah. Can I just give a shout out to I'm So Excited?
I was about to say, I'm So Excited is silly, but if you're in the mood for silly.
Silliest, dumbest movie.
He knows it too.
Super into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I recently just watched The Flower of My Secret again, which is,
I haven't seen that one.
It's a cool warm up to All About My Mother. You can see him kind of revving up some ideas. In fact, at one point, they're one of the lead character in the book is an author, and they talk about this story that she wants to write, and it's the plot of Volver.
At
least
right.
part of the plot of Volver. Yeah. One of the inciting incident of Volver, I guess. Funny little things. And I brought that up years later when I interviewed him about Volver, and he didn't even remember that that was a thing. So go figure.
When are we going to get to talk about the human voice?
We've seen it.
We saw it months ago.
Yeah.
When is it going? I know it hit theaters for a minute.
Yeah.
A brief, just tiny little moment. When is it going to stream or be available?
I've asked the Sony Classics publicist to keep me in the loop on when it's going to be streaming. When it does, we're totally reviewing it because it's great.
Yeah.
It is half an hour.
30-minute film.
His first film in English.
Tilda Swinton. Yeah.
It's amazing. But we'll talk about it. When people can see it with relative ease, we will for sure be talking about it.
I know. I'm impatient.
I know. All right. Well, listen, thanks for listening, everybody. Check out our friends on the internet. Go see what Bibbs and Whitney are up to on the Critically Acclaimed Podcast Network. They have a ton of shows over there. Check out the Schmoes Know. Dennis, anyone with Dennis Hensley. And if you were a Patreon member, you could be hearing Dennis as a guest on LKTV, bringing his years of insight and experience as a cruise ship entertainer to our discussion of the seminal 83 Canadian television special Anne Murray's Caribbean Cruise. Just letting you know that's there waiting for you. Check out The Sewers of Paris, the comics canon, which I was just on talking about the 80s run of Justice League International. Speaking of our friend Nalen, check out The Workroom, All Things Cozy, Deck the Hallmark, Fat Guys at the Movies, The Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts. Hey, leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on the show.
And Dave, I will read it on the show, and I will not be embarrassed about praise, because you're only leaving a 5-star.
Dave will get over his angst about people saying nice things about him.
Yeah.
you can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, like Stitcher Radio and thelounge.com, Spotify, Google Play, Amazon Music, CastBox, Podbean, you know the drill, all those places. You can follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for being here. Keep wearing masks, keep washing hands, take care of yourselves and each other, and we'll be back next time with more. Until then,
don't breathe on me. Goodbye.